Facebook session number 13952, Reel 2.
We're talking about the...
Mr. Symes, Reel 2. Did this initial mortaring cause any casualties to your unit?
Yes, we had our first death by shell fire in the area of Baron. But we had no other serious casualties at that time.
When did you actually go into action?
Well, our first battle was on the 10th of July, which was the battle for Malto, which was the hinge village for the capturing the Etterville Ridge and Hill 112. This was a disastrous battle for the battalion. We formed up in front of the on a reverse slope in front of Chateau de Fontaine. The whole of the battalion on this reverse slope, with some soft-skinned vehicles. The colonel was in front with his walking stick, blew his whistle, and off we went through the standing corn. Our first objective was a line of poplar trees about a half a mile to our front, which we could see quite plainly. And then it would be downhill through the standing corn into Malto. Well, now, my particular job in action was to support my company commander, but he had told me that I was to bring my Bren gun carrier, which had all the reserve ammunition on it, along with the attack. And, of course, I didn't think at the time, but I was really driving an atomic bomb because we had all the reserve ammunition in the back of the Bren gun carrier. I had a driver, Percy Young, and we are motoring along on the flank of the company when an 88 missed my carrier by only just a few feet. It came over the top of the carrier, and I thought it prudent to get the carrier down into a large rectangular hole that had been dug into the cornfields. And we had a smoke screen going down on our left, and I put the carrier down into this, my driver put the carrier down into this hole. And it wasn't until we got down in there that we realized that it was a German outside latrine, because at the bottom of the big hole were a series of slits, about 20 of them. It's quite a big place, about as big as this room. I could get my carrier in there. The Germans must have seen us go in there because they started firing mortar at us and machine gun fire, which fortunately went over our head and hit the far side of the slit of the trench. And we were in this position for about a half an hour. Couldn't get out. The attack had moved on, and the battalion were receiving casualties. And a Captain Braithwaite, who had sort of a free range, he was roaming around the battlefield, and he came and took the driver of the carrier away and said to me, "I wouldn't take that carrier any farther forward if I were you, Sergeant Major. Leave it there." I said, "Right, I will do that." And I got out of the hole that the carrier was in, and I then walked towards Malto to link up with my company. I got up to the line of poplar trees, and as I said, it was then a long downhill slope through cultivated standing corn, what was left of it, down to the village of Malto, which I could see. unfortunately, the battalion had, although they had captured Malto, the Germans put in a very, very strong counterattack. And while this was going on, I linked up with Captain Braithwaite, and he and I got as many of the wounded back up to the line of poplar trees, which was dead ground to the people in Malto, to the enemy of Malto, where a number of jeeps were assembled with two stretchers on the top of each jeep to be able to take the wounded back to the field dressing station on the other side of Chateau de Fontaine. I don't know how long we were doing this, but it seemed to be a long time, until the battalion was ordered to withdraw. And then I linked up with one or two of my company members, and we made our way back to Chateau de Fontaine. Now, that in that action, we had 208 other ranks killed and wounded, and we had 18 officers. All the senior officers had been killed. And we did get back to Fontaine, and we then went to an area just outside of Fontaine where we assembled, and we made up three companies out of four companies, and went back and took up a defensive position on our start line. At that time, I had 15 men in my company. No officers. I was the most senior person. I had two sergeants.
All the rest were casualties?
All the rest were casualties, yes. We did get some more recruits in from... we had other men coming in from other companies to bring us up to some sort of strength. But we never really got up to the same strength as we started at Malto ever again.
This was out of 120?
121 men. Actually, of course, some of those men went to what we call LOB. That was left out of battle. There was always one warrant officer, one CQMS, one sergeant, one corporal, lance corporal, and some other ranks that were always left out of battle. And so we had some of those that came up and joined us. Why? So we went in with 106 men.
Why do you think that the battle didn't go better than it did?
Well, I think perhaps even though the battalion had got to its objective at Malto, most of our supporting tanks, if not all of our supporting tanks, had been knocked out. And the Germans put in a counterattack with quite a heavy force of tanks. And infantry on its own just couldn't stand up to that. Actually, the brigadier had put in the a battalion of the 4th Dorsets to... see if they could get through to give assistance, but they couldn't. They couldn't get through to us, not at that stage. And so the only thing left to us was to withdraw and get back with what we had left.
How much of the action were you in personally?
Say that again.
How much of the actual action were you in personally?
I was only in the back end of it. Really, not actually in the shooting part of it, because I was more involved with Captain Braithwaite in getting back as many of the wounded as possible. We left a lot behind. There were a lot of brave men left behind at Malto when the battalion withdrew.
To be captured?
Yes. Oh, yes.
What was morale like afterwards in the unit?
Quite low, but it didn't last long, surprisingly enough. When we were ordered back to dig in on our start line, there was some dismay. But once we got back there and we took up our defensive position, then then I think the lads reacted very well indeed.
Did you get any desertions at this time?
No.
Were any of the Germans captured?
Yes, we did have. We had some in the early parts of the attack. I think it was about 30. About that number. These were forward elements of the Malto defensive area. They were laying in the cornfields before we got to the line of poplar trees in the road.
Did you see the
POWs?
Yes,
yes.
What impression did they make on you?
Well, they were good troops, and they were arrogant, very arrogant. They would go back with to our start line, and a lot of them strutted along. Sometimes you would any of them that had a little bit of English would throw certain remarks at you, like "We'll be back," and "It's not over yet," and that sort of thing.
How were they treated?
But by us, very well, I think.
Did anybody thump them?
No, I never saw anybody thump. No.
Or take anything from them?
Oh, yes, yes. I don't think many prisoners went back with wristwatches or binoculars and Lugers and that sort of thing. No weapons that... Actually, a lot of the troops were using German Lugers throughout the campaign because, of course, the Luger fired 9mm, which was the same as the Sten gun ammunition.
Was there any hatred of the Germans at this time?
No. Not at this time.
Was there any respect for them?
A certain amount, I think, because... they were on the receiving end of air attacks, bombardment by our guns, and they were still ready to fight even after they had received all that. And in any case, there was a certain feeling in the early days that the German soldier was going through the same sort of suffering that the British soldier was going through.
Did you know which unit they came from?
I would have to I'd have to look that up, but I'm not quite sure. But they were from the tanks that the enemy tanks that were reported as Tigers, supported by infantry. I think it was 21st Panzer and 17th Panzer, I think.
Now, you were telling me that battle was the 10th of July, but you were telling me then you concentrated.
Yes, well, we... We dug in front of Fontaine, and we stayed there for several days. And it was at this... stage that the second in command of the battalion, Major Malik, he took over command, and he had a new second in command, a Major Phillips, who was from the Royal West Kents, and they were discussing plans with the OC of the 7th Somerset Light Infantry for the relief of the Somerset Light Infantry's position. They were in the line in front of the chateau when a shell came over and killed all three of them. So we had lost two commanding officers in a matter of 3 days. And it was at this time that Colonel Talbot took over. He was a Royal West Kent officer. And he became our commanding officer and stayed with us right to the end of the campaigns.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, it was a question of moving then into the Vikash, and it became, from our point of view, small battles that went into villages, through orchards, and having a few casualties here and a few casualties there, assembling O groups for another move forward, it was a general feeling of determination that we would eventually be able to break out. It was at this time that the battlefield, or the area of the Bukhars, it had a different sort of smell about it. There were dead animals laying about all over the place, the dust. Most of us were wearing scarves that we had looted from various buildings around our nose to keep the dust out. It was really a period of stopping, moving on, moving to the flanks, and a very difficult time, I think, for an infantry soldier.
Were you pestered by insect life?
Not really enough to worry about. I don't think we really worried about insects. We're more worried about getting to Crossroads, which would be under fire, because I expect you've been told before that the Germans were able to range on Crossroads and various salient points because they've been in that area long enough to be able to have the perfect range on most areas.
Were there any civilians in the area?
Didn't see very many. There was one occasion that we did an attack on a cluster of farm buildings with some orchards associated with it, and we were successful in being able to drive the Germans who were holding this area. We had about 20 prisoners which were sent back, and the whole area became very quiet. And a French lady came into our company headquarters to say that there were quite a lot of French children and ladies, their mothers, and old men that were in a fold in the ground on the other side of the orchard. So my company commander said, that I was driving my company carrier at this time. We never did get another driver for it. And said, well, take one of the lads and put some food on the carrier and take this lady and go down to this area where the French civilians were gathered, which I did. And I went down. There was about 20 women, children, and elderly men, and some horses that were in this fold in the ground. So I drove the carrier down into it and took the food out and put it on the ground so that they could help themselves to it and do a distribution. And there was a small mortar team, German mortar team, must have been hiding in the area, must have seen the carrier go down into this fold in the ground, must have known that there are women and children and civilians there, but that made no difference. They sent over about 5 mortar bombs. And then I guess disappeared. Fortunately, they didn't land quite right. They didn't hurt any of the French civilians, but all it did do was break the legs of 2 horses, which we were able to shoot. But that was the only collection of French civilians that I actually saw in the early days in Normandy.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, then, of course, the next thing that I remember was crossing the Seine at Vernon.
What about before that? Were you involved in the attack on Cahagne and Jerk?
Yes, the one on the attack on Jerks, yes. That was a fairly hairy time for the battalion, especially for D Company, because as I remember it, there was a long road down which went down into a valley, and the road went up on the other side. And my company headquarters was down in the valley, and we had platoons on the reverse slope in front of us. And it was there that we'd been there a couple of days, and we'd had no food. And so my company commander, who was now Major Braithwaite, and he said, perhaps I could take the carrier and move out of the valley and see if I could find B echelon and get some food to take back to the company, which meant going out when it was dark in the early hours of the morning, but coming back in the light, and I would be in view of the Germans that were on the high ground in front of us. I went out in the dark with one of my lads, and we eventually found B echelon, and we loaded up after the cooks had prepared it into big containers, like keep hot containers, a nice stew and some tea, and then we crept to the top of the hill and looked down into the valley, and I reckon that we had about 3/4 of a mile to go before we actually got into dead ground. So it was a question of foot down on the carrier, go like hell for 3/4 of a mile, and the Germans had spotted us, and they fired at us, but they didn't hit us. We had shells bursting each side of us down into the dead ground so that we could get some food up to the company. I did that 3 times while we were there. Eventually, the Germans moved out of that position because there was another battalion that came in and did a clearing up operation in the Jerks area. But we did have some casualties while we were there.
Were you in the battles on Mont Pinson afterwards?
I didn't. The battalion was affected, but I wasn't forward with the rifle companies on that particular action. So I'm not able to talk very much about that one.
What about the attack on Cahagne just before?
On Cagnes just before Jerks. Yes. Well, that was the one that we. Where the French civilians were in through the orchards and down to the French civilians is where I lost one of my sergeants there. It was at this time that I think most soldiers had become fatalists. We thought, well, if a bullet or a shell has got our name on it, there's not very much you can do about it. And after this action around the Cagnes area, I was sitting on a fallen tree trunk with two of my sergeants, Sergeant Muscle, Sergeant Stagg, and myself, and we were having our meal when some small mortar stuff came over and onto the farm buildings just to the right of us, and one of the mortar bombs hit the apex roof of a barn, and a little piece of shrapnel hit Sergeant Stagg in the forehead and killed him. If it had been a foot either way, it could have been me or Sergeant Muscle.
When the actual breakout of the Allies came at Falaise, were you anywhere near there?
Yes, we went into the Falaise Gap at Chamois. We went to went inside, and absolute carnage. And I think one of the most surprising things for most of us was the amount of horse transport that the Germans had, because there were dead horses and four-wheeled carts laying all along the side of the road that had been knocked out by aircraft, tanks brewed up all over the place, German army vehicles laying up in fields, a lot of German dead all over the place. As a matter of fact, when we went to what was left of a farm as my company headquarters, there was about a dozen German dead laying in the farmyards, which we had to move out of the way. And in the fields at the back of the farm were quite a lot of German vehicles and German dead. And one of the big surprises to us was that there were several elderly French ladies that were going through the pockets of the dead Germans, climbing up into the back of the vehicles and taking things. Dead bodies didn't seem to mean anything to these French ladies at all.
What type of things were they taking, do you think?
Well, they were taking wallets from the German dead. They were taking rings off their fingers, whatever they could get their hands on, I think. But we did go out and shoo them off.
What was their reaction to that?
They didn't like it very much. But I don't think it was any avail, because they came back again anyway.
Did they swear at you?
Well, if they did, it would be in French. I would have understood it. Probably they did.
Why did you shoo them off?
Well, it didn't seem right to us that that elderly French ladies should be going through the pockets of dead German soldiers. In any case, we were ordered to go through their clothing so that we could get possibly information that would be useful to our intelligence section, unit names, even where they were recruited from by letters that they might have in their pockets, which the French women were taking away.
Did you actually do that?
Do what?
Gather material in that kind of way.
Yes. There was quite a lot of information that was gathered in that way. I suspect that the intelligence section would be able